to be honest, Gauranga Mahaprabhu. So she was thinking when Raghunadas Goswami came to Govardhan, he was thinking about give up his life.
Raghunadas. Yeah.
Raghunadas. And she was thinking where at that time were Sarupta Mandar and Ramananda Roy.
Anyway, okay, yeah, okay. Something, yeah, I think I just, whatever I can, my language. Someone was asking a question about any details about the disappearance or tirubhav of Srila Surabhadra Goswami and Rai Ramananda. The disappearance of the Lord's devotees, of course, is a very sad and lamentable occasion. And there's a bhajan in our songbook that in separation, oh, where this Yeya Nila Premadana Harinam, I mean, Yeya Nila Premadana, where have all the Vaishnavas gone? So even the disappearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not clear. There are three or four different ideas because he didn't leave any tangible evidence, any form that we could perceive or see. Some say that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left this world by going in the Jagannath temple and he was taking darshan, and suddenly he ran in the temple and merged in the deity of Jagannath. And others say that Lord, in separation from Krishna, Lord Chaitanya ran into the sea as he did once before. It's recorded in Chaitanya Charitamrita that he was, of course, recovered in a fisherman's net. But some people say at another time he ran into the sea and was never to be found again. Went to Goloka. And other people say that he went to the Totogopinath temple and he entered the temple there and never came out. And someone else says that he stepped on a nail in Rathiatra, some professor. Stepped on a nail, yeah, and his foot got some kind of septic poisoning or something, bacterial infection. And then he went to some lonely place and gave up his body. So there's no... Asan? Is there... You can put that asan out. Provision. Asan. You can just put it here, make two rows. Hey, look, you need to go like this in front of you. It's right here. Just go like this. Okay. Yeah. Start here. Yeah, like that. Yeah. You know, just sit down. You're in row one, seat A. Where's he going? Hey, you're in seat B. Row one, seat B. You want to sit in the back and sleep or what? You can, the mat's long enough. I don't care. What do I care? It's unrecorded. So we don't know much about the disappearance of the Lord, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then there's some discussion about all the different parishads of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They're all Nitya Parishad. Their bodies are transcendental. Ananda Chinmaya Rasa Pratibhavitavis. Tabiri Eva Nijalupatiya Kalabi. It's told in Brahma Samhita that all the gopis and all the eternal servants and loving associates of the Lord, they're Nijalupatiya Kalabi. Kala. Kala means apart. And rup means their form. Nija means his own. Nija rupataya kalabi. So Radharani is an expansion of Krishna's Varani Shakti. So all of the parishads, gopas, gopas, gopis, or the ladies and the gentlemen, ladies, the male and female, what we call Nitya parishads, eternal family and associates and companions of the Lord, they are all in transcendental spiritual bodies. So there's no physical body to even really be seen in one sense. Although, out of His mercy, when the Lord and His devotees come here, they make themselves prakat. It's called prakat lila. Prakat means prakash. Prakash means manifest, visible, seeable. Because we can't. How can Krishna's body is spirit? So how do people on the battlefield see a spiritual body? Can you see your soul? Your soul is spiritual. It's a spiritual body. There's no bones. And so their bodies, first of all, are all transcendental. So there's nothing to be... No, when they leave this world, there's nothing to leave behind. When we leave this world, we leave something behind. Because there's Atma. There's Atma and body. And the body is bones and flesh and blood and all these things. And the Atma is consciousness, Satchit. Satchit Anand. So they're external, they're internal, their whole, everything is spiritual. Siddhadeya, Siddhasarup, spiritual bodies. So there's no body to be left behind, to be cremated like the Hindus, or buried like the Christians or Muslims or whatever. Or left to the dogs. There's nothing like that. So they manifest and they're unmanifest. Like Lord Chaitanya was manifest. Krishna and all of His associates, they don't take birth like we take birth. From the Vishuddha Sattva Chit, the pure consciousness, first Krishna entered the pure consciousness of Vasudev in the prison house of Kamsa, and then from his consciousness he transferred his consciousness into the heart of his wife Devaki. So it's all about consciousness, and then she showed the leela of giving birth to Krishna Devaki in the same way. So when Krishna comes, it's not by ordinary birth, it's simply a divine appearance. And it looks human because there's stages of pregnancy of Shachimata and Devaki, and the demigods and devatas are coming to visit and do prikrama of Shachimata and Devaki and offer pranams. The pastimes are analogous, they're parallel. The birth of Krishna from Devaki and Vasudeva, and of course our Krishna, Vrindavan Krishna, born from Nanda and Yashoda and Gokul. And then the appearance for Avirbhava, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the son of Mother Shachi, and Jagannath Mishra. So that's their birth. So as their birth is totally transcendental and inconceivable, and not some type of material measure or whatever. That's why Krishna says in Gita, Janma Karma Chame Divyam. Evam yovati tatvata tyaktvam tevam punar janma nayati mamati sarjana. He says in chapter 4, verse 9 of Gita, my birth is divya, divya jana. My birth is transcendental. It's not a spiritual birth, because He's a spiritual entity. We have material birth and material death and material life, because we're material. But Krishna has spiritual birth and spiritual activities. Divya Janam and Divya Leela. Divya means divine, transcendental, spiritual. Divya Janam, Divya Leela, and Divya Tirobhav, disappearance. It's all transcendental. So there's no body to be left. There's no body. Oh, we dug up, we did some excavation in Puri and we found the bones of Saint Francis. Or he found the bones of Saint, Nicholas, or some famous saint. Or we dug the earth in Calcutta, and we found the bones of Mother Teresa. So Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, and Surup Damodar. Surup Damodar is Lita Sakhi. She doesn't have any bones in the grave, and Rai Ramananda is Vishakha. So first we have to understand the tattva, because you're talking about the lila. You're asking a question about Leela, the Tirobhav Leela, disappearance pastime of Gadad, of Surup Damodar. Arai Ramananda, can you explain, are there any details? So I'm explaining tattva, the spiritual truth and underlying foundation and reality upon which all lila is based. Tattva Siddhanta. So there is nothing written in the biographical accounts, in the hagiographies or the charitram. Charitra means like story, life story and teachings. Chaitanya Charita. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Charita. Mahakavya. That's by Murari Gupta. And Sri Krishna and Sri Chaitanya Charitamritam, the nectar life of Lord Chaitanya Charita. I was not told. So we know that he came and he left and went to another universe in a traveling road show of Lord Chaitanya. So the sun sets here. Oh, the sun has. When the sun sets, we don't say the sun has died. Oh, the sun died. We should have a funeral. We should have some ceremony, funeral ceremony. I don't know if the sun will ever come again. So the sun goes down here and it rises in Moscow, or it rises in Tokyo. So the sun is always in the sky. Surup Damodar and Rai Ramananda, whom you're questioning about, they're always in the sky of manifestation. They're always here manifest because Gaur's Leela is Nitya. Gaur's Leela is not born and Gaur's Leela does not die. It's Nitya Leela, it's eternal. It's like the circus is always going on for so many years and it rolls into town in St. Petersburg and the elephants and the dancers and everything is there. And you see, maybe you've seen circus? No, you don't have there, that type of thing. But I've seen in other places. So some, or like some movie, this is more you can relate to, modern. Some movie comes to the cinema hall and you see, and now, oh, it's not playing here. No one went to the next city. It's something like this. You know? So you can drive to the next city and see the same movie. Or it's, oh, I saw it was in that theater on Friday and Saturday. Oh, what about Sunday? No, it's not playing in that theater. It's playing in another theater. You look in a newspaper. Oh, it's over here because big city has 10, 20 theaters. So Friday, Saturday, the new movie will be there. So the Leela's like that. In one sense, there's no answer to your question. Because can you just, in terms of philosophy, can you describe the disappearance of Surup Damodar and Rai Ramananda? No. I can't describe. Why? Because they didn't disappear. I can describe the disappearance Leela of some, you know, modern Acharya or someone or Ramanujacharya or Madhvacharya, and Ramanujacharya's body is still there in some type of samadhi. It's preserved by yoga powers or something in South India. His actual body is there somehow. I remember when I was researching. And there's some amazing things. But the Lord's appearance is transcendental. He's eternal. He doesn't disappear. We use that term. Disappear means he's not visible to us. So the real answer to your question, can you describe the Lord's disappearance, Leela? I just did. You got it? Reading it. She said, can you describe the disappearance of Surup Damodar and Rai Ramananda? And I said, I did. I just did already. They don't disappear. They disappear from our vision. Like you see me, oh, I saw Maharaj, and I walk out the door. And then I go down the street and go in someone else's house. Oh, I see Maharaj. Oh, yeah, we don't see him here anymore. No, we see him over here. So if I walk out the door, I'm still going on. You understand? So that's not a very tricky question. If you know the tattva, because there aren't any there's some minor details of the Krishna. It's called Moshala Leela, Krishna. Moshala Leela in the twelfth canto of Bhagavatam, the disappearance pastime of Bhagavan Sri Krishna and Prabhasa Kshetra near Dwarka. He was sitting there on a rock and some hunter shot an arrow in his foot. It's there in Srimad Bhagavatam. And then he left behind some material body to bewilder the atheists. They said, oh, see, you know, he's not God, he's just... And in his spiritual form, he went to another universe to manifest the pastimes, Prakat Lila. Because his pastimes, he wound them up here and went on. Packed up, you come and visit a place, you come into India, you stay, you unpack your bag, and you do so many things, and then you pack your bag, and then you go. So Krishna came to India, he unpacked his bags, and he bought out the Govardhan Mountain, and he bought out the Yamuna, and he bought out the dust of Vrindavan, and Nandagram Barsan, and all the coward boys, cow everybody. And then they jumped and played and danced and frolicked and sang and ate and had a good time. And then he put all back. So this is the answer to the question. And they can appear at any time, in any place. There's no limitation of time. For spirit, matter, material, this material energy is limited by time and space. But transcendent spiritual energy is unlimited. God can appear in a second, anywhere. You just cry out, hey Bhagavan, Govinda Damo Dara Madhaveti. Krishna was in Dwarka. Dwarka is 2,500 kilometers from Delhi. Draupadi was being disrobed. No, taking her sari off. And Draupadi, wife of the Pandavas. By Dushasan or something. Some member of Duryodhana's party. Pandavas lost the gambling match. Oh Govinda, oh Damodar, oh Madhav, oh, save me, save me. And then 1 second, Krishna's there, giving kilometer after kilometer of saris. As he took off 2 meters, pulled 2 meters, then 2 meters went on again. And he was going like this, and pretty soon he had a huge Govardhan mountain of cloth, and still she was fully covered. Draupadi. And in 1 second, you heard Satyuga, Prahlad Maharaj? There's an avatar, there's an eternal avatar of the Lord, Nrisimha Bhagavan. He's eternally existing in the Sringa Loka. He has his own planet in Vaikuntha. And whenever there's a need to protect the devotee, he's there. Even if you don't have some ring with his picture on it, you don't have some necklace on, you don't have a Nrisimha Shalagram, you don't have a t-shirt, you don't have a tattoo on your arm, or on your chest, or on your back. Don't need any of it. Just need devotion. Konte, Krishna told Arjuna on the battlefield, Konteya pratijanihi name bhakta pranashiti. If you're sick, then you can sit in the back. No, it's not okay. Tell him in Russian, if he's sick, he should sit in the back because I don't want to be sick. No, I think it's possible. It's like, usually. So, other question? Yeah. How's your mom? Is she okay?
Yeah, she's nice.
But have your tiffin, remind me. Your mom's a little, little thing.
Yeah, I forgot. So, just recently I read in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, such like very amazing statement about names of Shiva. It said when Narada Muni came to Shiva, and Sanatana Goswami described that we have to put in one level names of Shiva, names of Vishnu. And if one takes names of Vishnu like aside from names of Shiva, it's like supposed to be like an offense. And in he mentions there like it's like second offense of holy name, but actually it's a second offense of holy name to put Vishnu's name. I mean to put any name on the level of Vishnu, even Shiva or Brahma. But there in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, oh no, when Narada he came to Brahma, Brahma he started to glorify Shiva. And he told that his name is supposed to be respected like on the same level of Vishnu. And I was like surprised what he said. He's like, I never heard it before.
You know, the question is about the position of Shiva in relation to all the other devatas.
Yeah, I mean, why did they put his name on the level?
Yeah, I know. I understand. Uh-huh. I have the answer. I don't know what the translation of the book you're mentioning you've read, it don't say.
Mm-hmm.
But you read some translation of Brihad Bhagavatamritam, some tikkas and commentaries also there of Sanatan Goswami. Sometimes it's mixed, some editions it's mixed up, so you don't know what's the tikka and what's the other people's ideas. But the question is, the relationship between Shiva and all the devatas mm-hmm. and Vishnu.
Mm-hmm.
So of course Vishnu is the Paradevata, the supreme, topmost Lord. And the second offense to the holy name is not very much understood also, because that actual offense, we actually wrote an article about it on Facebook, the actual offense is to think that the name of Shiva is less than the name of Lord Vishnu. Because Shiva, unlike any other devata, there's no other devata. That's why do you think Gopakumara is going to Brahma and Brahma is glorifying Shiva? Why is Brahma glorifying Shiva? Because Shiva is higher position than he is. Because Shiva is actually, unlike Brahma, Shiva is also equal to Vishnu because he's Sadashiva. Sadashiva has his own spiritual planet called Sadashiva Loka. So to think that Shiva, Sadashiva, or the name of Shiva, is equal to all the other demigods, that is an offense. That's actually the second offense. Because Shiva and Vishnu, their names, because Shiva is actually a name for Vishnu, because Shiva means all auspicious. It's also a personality. And Shiva, of course, is the expansion of Lord Sankarshan. Lord Sankarshan, who is totally transcendental, he expands in the Sada Shiva. And Sada Shiva expands into different forms in the material world, the Shiva of Kailash, and the 11 Rudras who, on the fifth canto, who dance and destroy the universe. So that he was what was being said there, where Brahma says that Shiva is on the level of Vishnu. This is correct. Sada Shiva is Vishnu. He's Vishnu Tattva. Shiva is Vishnu Tattva. Shiva's name is Vishnu Tattva. But when you talk about the expansions of Shiva in the material world, so this second offense, I mean, actually, these 10 offenses that we use in the holy name of Krishna, they're coming from the Skanda Purana, Padma Purana, and they're actually talking about Shiva's name. They're usually used when they're chanting japa. You know, they're being applied. So all those things, Sadhu Ninda, all of them, they're fully, if forget about the names of Krishna and Vishnu, you can also apply that to don't offend sadhus that are chanting the name of Vishnu. Sadhus that are chanting the name of Shiva, instead of Shiva, because they may be Shaivites, and they may be identifying with Sada Shiva as the spiritual counterpart of Shiva, mm-hmm. the spiritual form. So it's a little bit of a tricky offense. So because Varuna and Agni, Indra, these are all names of devatas. So to think that any devata other than Shiva is equal to or independent of Vishnu is an offense. This is actually the second offense. Because Shiva and Vishnu, they're both Vishnu Tattva, instead of Shiva. Vishnu has so many expansions. One of Vishnu's expansions is the Jivatma. Mameyavamsho Jivaloka. But we're not God, we're part and parcel. So Shiva, instead of Shiva, is God. He's spiritual. Then he expands. And Shiva and Kailash and all these who are actually doing the work in Tamaguna or whatever. So this is this point where you're supposed to go to Kumar, and he goes to Brahma, and Brahma's pointing him knowledge. Shiva's, there's all the demigods, and then beyond all these material planets and all the demigods in Brahma Loka is Shiva Loka, Mahakal, and half of Shiva Loka is in the material realm, and the other half is in Vaikuntha. So Sada Shiva is in the spiritual side of the Shiva Loka, and on the lower side are the expansions of Shiva. I have a whole CD about this, you know, Shiva Tattva, 15 hours on MNS audio. Some other question? Yeah? Speak up. You can want to do. You can speak Russian. You can translate it if you feel better.
No, I'm speaking.
Okay.
Well, I have a problem. I don't read so much, so I.
It's not a problem. Hardly anybody does. Don't feel bad, especially now. Bookstores are closing everywhere. Mm-hmm. You and everybody, every other devotee in the rest of the world, you know, they're busy. Family, business, whatever. Go ahead.
So, Rupa Goswami, he's he considered himself a Manjari, or he was always lamenting and crying to be a Manjari, or he considered, he writes in his books any time that he considered himself a Manjari?
Yeah, the question is that the eternal associates of the Lord, of course, they are eternally those identities. They have many multiple identities. Rupa Goswami is traveling with Lord Chaitanya from universe to universe in the Nitya Gaura Lila, serving as Rupa Goswami with his brother Sanatan and all the six Goswamis. And then they have their forms in the various rasas. So Rupa Goswami is in Madhurya Ras in Vrindavan as Sri Rupa Manjari. And Das Goswami is there as Tulsi Manjari. Sometimes they say also Rati Manjari. They all have their Manjari forms or Sakhi forms. Surup Damodar, of course, is a Lalita Sakhi. So they, when they write books, it says in it, Sad Goswami Ashtakam Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipano Sad Dharma Samstapako Lokanam Hitakarano Tribhuvane Manyo Sharanya Karo. That they wrote books for the Hitakarano means the benefit of everyone else. Loka Hitakarano. For the benefit of the people, you and me. They wrote so many bhajans, so many books, and so many prayers, Stavavali by Raghunath Das Goswami, Stavamala by Rupa Goswami, Padyavali, which is a collection by Rupa Goswami, so many books, and so many poems, and prayers. And there, they're writing for the sadhaka, for the man and the woman who are practicing bhakti, and endeavoring for prema, siddhi, or perfection in bhakti bhajan. So they're guiding us in our goal. What is the goal we want to attain? And how should we feel? What type of feeling should we be cultivating? What type of behavior should we have? What type of attitude should we have? How should we think? And how should we relate? How should we treat other devotees and treat the world? And it's all behavior and conduct. So then how to pray and how to lament, and how to cry, and how to feel separation from God or from Krishna and Radha and the Parishads. Then they write and teach us how to cry. We know how to cry for Maya. We know how to cry, oh, it hurts, I hurt myself. Or I hurt myself, or I hurt my heart. Somebody hurt my heart, and I cried. Or somebody hurts my body, and I cried. Or I hurt somebody's heart. I hurt someone's heart and they cry. Right? Hurt someone's body and they cry. So we know crying from the time we're born. That's the first thing we do. What's the first thing we do when we come out of the womb? First we cry, then we breathe. First go, ah! Because before, when you're in the womb, you've got a pipe. Well, pipe, umbilical cord, and you're breathing with your mother. You know, you're tapping into your mother's oxygen. Your mouth is quiet, your lungs are sleeping and growing. So it's like some old tape recorders, they don't work too well, so you have to go, tap. Or an Indian flashlight. I have this Indian flashlight, you turn it on, And it goes for about 5 minutes, and it goes off. And then while you're walking, I'm pricking, it goes tut, and it goes on. Batteries are good, but you have to keep it going. Go for 10 minutes, and so the baby comes out, and he has never been in this world outside the womb before for 10 months. So the first thing he does is yuck. He cries. And then the doctor slaps him, so he cries and it startles him. He becomes stunned and startled by the pain of birth and the crack in the back. And they crack him in such a way that it turns on the button. It's like pressing a button on your car or your motorcycle. Boom, and it goes. He starts breathing and the samsara begins, or life begins. So we start crying from the time we're born, and we know very well. But how to cry for Krishna? How to cry for Radharani in separation? Oh, when we chant the holy name, Lord, we should cry like a child, genuine crying of a child for his mother. Oh, yeah, I was a child. I was a child, but it was so long ago. And now I'm 25, I'm 30, 35, 40, whatever. I get these beads, and someone tells me to cry. I don't know, I forgot. Life's been so tough, I even repressed my crying instincts. Life is so, so hard. High school and college and university and work field. We just don't even have time or know how to break down and cry anymore. So then we, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Not coming, So then these prayers are, they help it. These prayers of Rupa Goswami, Raghunath Das, they cultivate the field of the heart. Like if you have a field, field like a land, and it's full of old dead trees and trunks and big boulders and rocks and all kinds of debris, you can't really make rows. You can't make rows and plant corn and apple trees and vegetables. You can't, because all rocks and obstacles there. You have to clear the field, clear it, and mush the rocks out, and take the old trees, dig out the old dead trees, and put gober there, cow dung, make it nice, clean. So then you can grow something. So they prepare our hearts. These prayers of the Goswamis, they prepare our hearts, they soften our hearts, they mold our hearts, and they create a heart that can cry for Krishna. These prayers of the Goswamis, they mold and create and bend our heart in such a way that we can actually genuinely begin to cry for Radharani. Even what to speak of cry for Guru. Oh yeah, I have my Guru. Oh Gurudev, please save me. Because we become complacent, we become confident, we become overconfident and complacent, and we feel powerful, we feel secure and strong, and we become proud. And we forget. We forget how fallen we were, or we are, before we got the mercy of Sri Guru. So then we become complacent, take Guru for granted, don't think much about Guru, never cry out, "Oh Gurudev, where are you? Do you hear my prayers? Please help me. Manifest in my heart, manifest your presence to me somehow. I feel too weak, I feel too lonely, it's the world's too powerful." So this is good. So these kind of, if you sit next to fire, you come from a cold place, maybe you're outside in the snow or out somewhere walking and it's very cold and chilly. And you come into some house and there's a fireplace or there's some fire or it's warm. And then you go to the stove and warm up, or there's some fireplace. And you get nearby there, then your hands start to feel warm and your clothes get warm and feel toasty and warm in your body, and the cold goes away. So by being near that heat, then, or that fire, then you become warm naturally. Even start perspiring. I had all these sweaters and jackets on when I was outside. Like the example is a ski lodge. If you go skiing, snow skiing, and out there it's freezing cold out on the slopes. You have all these clothes and padding and everything, sweaters. But inside a ski lodge where you rest, relax, and there's chairs and couches and there's food and everything, you usually have a big fireplace, and so much wood, and very hot and cozy and warm there. So you go there and they say, oh, it's too hot, and you start taking off your jackets and everything, otherwise you start sweating. So by reading these prayers of all these Goswamis over and first it's like, I'm so far away from these prayers. These prayers, I can't relate to these prayers. These prayers don't meet. We don't fit. But gradually, as you read them over and over and pray sincerely to the author, Raghunath Das, Rupa Goswami Pad, Vishnu Chakravarti Pad, to bless you with some entrance to those prayers, to the meaning of those prayers, and the feeling, let the meaning of those prayers settle in my mind. Let the feelings inside these prayers come in my heart and settle in my heart and transform my heart. People talk about transformation. So it's a transformation of consciousness. It's a transformation of heart. It's a transformation of desire. This is the whole practice of Krishna consciousness. Turn the darkness of our consciousness into the brilliant light of love. So these prayers are one of the very important elements which brings about the transformation of consciousness and the transformation of heart. That's why they wrote so painstakingly, wrote these down and by hand with a little piece of metal stylus and then on these rectangular shaped dried palm leaves, they etched the Sanskrit there and wrote on them. Very hard work for our benefit. Lokanam hitakarano. Hitakarano. They did benefit for the people. 500 years ago they wrote these prayers and vilap, lamenting and separation from Radharani and Krishna. Oh, I saw you and now I can't see you, and I was holding your beautiful, delicate, fragrant lotus feet in my hand, and I was painting red color on the bottom of your feet so carefully, and all of a sudden I was so absorbed in the fragrance of your feet and the shape of your feet and the feel of your lotus feet, Radha, and then I lost that sporty. I didn't see that anymore. So I'm crying. Oh, you were so kind, and I had such fortune, and now I'm nowhere. Very touching, moving prayers. No? Then all the commentaries are there by the great Rasik Vaishnavas and realized souls, past and present, are there. And now those commentaries and books are in English and Russian, Bengali, Hindi, many languages. It's a great fortune for all of us. These books are powerful. Even the books just by themselves without any commentaries are very powerful. It's like they have these, in homeopathic medicine, they have different strengths and potencies of medicine. 6x, and then 10x, and then 50x, and 100x, and 200x. So the higher the number, the more the power. So the verses are like 10x, and then one commentary makes it like 50x, and then 100x. So the very rustic commentaries make it like very powerful. Very, very powerful, very potent. And the verse starts transforming you slowly, and then you get the whole long. The verse is only 15 words, and the commentary, the tika commentary, is like 600 words. So many. So then you get the message, you get the bhav, you get the feeling, you get the idea. Other question?